This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldone. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 346 of the Outlander podcast. I am Ginger.
And I'm still Summer. And we are in love with all things Outlander. The only thing I would like to say this week, it's not really an announcement, but I didn't realize how much I was going to miss Comic-Con until they made it solely at home. And it's like, here's the thing. I need to be focused to really do Comic-Con, right? And I can't focus at my house on Comic-Con. So when I'm down there, I'm balls to the wall, all the things. It's all about Comic-Con. I'm going to this, I'm going to that. This is my plan, my schedule. But when I'm at home, I got too much other stuff to do. And I missed, I should say. Well, I guess I'm currently missing it. I'm missing the travel, the being there, It's a big thing. It's not just the stuff. It's just the experience of it, you know?
It is. I'm glad they had the Comic-Con at home so that there was something. I'm not saying that that was bad. When they first announced it, okay, I was like, it was no surprise they were going to cancel the in-person part. What was a kind of a happy surprise was that they were going to do Comic-Con at home. Okay, great. Everyone, I think, was wondering, you know, what was it going to look like? It was definitely pared down. And you'll, if you've never been to Comic-Con, but you've enjoyed our kind of mini recaps about our reduxes, about stuff that we Outlander related and not, based on different interviews that we were able to do. Yeah, you will notice that, I mean, we'll still have interviews. I was able to do two, completely not Outlander related, but one was with a composer and a composer lyricist team, and then the other one was with a production designer who was crazy interesting. I really think you guys, especially if you like Broadway and if you like, even if you are not into set design, I think you'll be crazy. It's crazy interesting because a lot of the questions were not just about like where how he was trained and how he did this and how he learned this and what did he does. No, it was so interesting because there were a number of questions that were about all the pivots in the industry since COVID began. And it's fascinating. It's fascinating. So I really do think you guys will enjoy it. But that aside from that, which is not a huge aside, or that aside, I should say, it's other than that, yeah, I don't think I really, quote unquote, like had the feels about missing it until Thursday or Friday. And someone, I saw at least two or three friends sharing photos from like group shots from Comic-Con's past on Twitter, and I was like, why am I feeling this?
I know. You know, and it's so like, funny.
I don't have any pictures this year.
Because like a couple of years ago, or was it last year? Or might have probably last year, where I was like, I don't know how many more of these I have in me. This just for like the sheer volume of people. You know, just the crowd volume. And I was just like, I don't know how many more of these I have in me, but I clearly have a few more because I was all of the pictures popping up in my memories. I was like, I'm so sad.
Yeah, I was surprised. I'm glad you mentioned that. I was also kind of surprised. Not that I wasn't disappointed or anything. But there's no FOMO because we're not missing out because nothing to be there for. But gracious. And I'm just going to say this, and I'm not trying to poo-poo on anything. You know this. But honestly, I would be surprised. I'd be very happy because they were responsible this year in canceling it. I won't say so early, but early enough for a lot of us to get, you know, refunds and everything. So it wasn't like a month early. It was like 3 to 5 months early that they canceled it, right? Maybe 4 months early. So because they were so responsible in canceling it, the in-person part, I believe to the bottom of my heart or from the bottom of my heart that they will be responsible in the future. Whatever that means, whatever it looks like, whether it's approaching one in person, whether it's, I don't know. I mean, what do you do? Oh my gosh, this is taking us way off into a tangent that we don't have super time to get to. But my whole point was to say they were responsible. I have heart. I have hope and I have faith that they will be responsible going forward. So that part, I'm not afraid. I know who they are. Anyway, so I have comfort in that when we are able to go back in person, it will be as safe as they can manage it. Number one. Number two, I truly, honestly would be surprised if there's an in-person one next year. And I hate to say that, but we're getting super sped up vaccine trials, which is amazing. No, not really super scary because I'm not afraid of them. Not afraid.
Okay.
But my point is, I'm really wondering if they're going to have another at home next year. The reason I say that is because it's not just a small event. 100,000 people in that place is such an environment for the
breeding ground. Oh, it's
that's
a breeding
what I'm saying.
Ground.
Yeah. And you know, when you go in there and you're sitting next to people, you are touching, you're bumping thighs, you're bumping shoulders. Like there, that's what's scary. And not the experiences, but I'm like, because people have paid for their badges and they've done this and they've done that. Like, I don't even know how you do that until there's a vaccine and a treatment, right? Or better treatment. Mm-hmm. So I am just putting this out there. I hope I'm vacillating between saying, I hope I'm wrong and I hope they do it. Because the thing is, whatever it looks like to keep it safe, because if they do try something that is spaced out, it's going to be a really disappointing Comic-Con. And I don't mean that I wouldn't want to be there in that case. I'm just saying you can't have the same type of attendance at panels if you're socially distanced.
No. Well, the thing is they would, I mean, this is all speculation. I don't have the real answers to any of the things. But I mean, the only way that they could do it is to literally limit the crowd sizes and limit the amount of people that get to go and limit the amount of people that can be in any specific space at a specific time. They already do limit it based on seats, but I mean, it would definitely change the landscape of Comic-Con for sure.
It would take it down a lot. And it's not even just who's let in the room and what's the number. It's your in line. You can, that line for Hall, that big huge overflow line, the line for Hall H and all everything else.
Yeah, no.
That line can't exist.
No.
That line cannot exist the way it is now. That's what I'm saying. It's not just who's let in. It's forget the lines. People milling about outside the auditorium or the building. It is like a sea of people. People walking across the street. That's sometimes the most stressful part. Oh my gosh, yeah. The exhibit hall. That can't happen. See what I'm saying? There's so much that I don't think this is just they were so responsible this time out of an abundance of caution, which again, I think everyone who did that was smart because they don't know what's going on. We have a better idea now, but we're having a lot of states with huge spikes in spread, and ultimately in spread, in diagnoses, in death, unfortunately. And I think until there is at least a vaccine, and the problem with a vaccine is even if one's available like in January or something like that, let's just say that's the earliest people are guessing, is that even if one comes out, it's not going to be available to all, to everyone right away. It's going to be those in the healthcare field, those at most who are most at risk, and then the elderly population, that type, as it should be. And the rest of us are not going to, who knows? I'm not saying never, it will happen. But all I'm saying is that you said you hit the nail on the head. It's like, I didn't know I would have these feelings about missing it.
Yeah, until we have a vaccine. Yeah, I don't know how you can go back. I don't, you know, all we can do is go, and all anyone can do right now is go forward. And we're all learning how to navigate the new landscape, right? I mean, I do, but it doesn't do
anything.
Unless
you have a TARDIS.
You do. I can't find it. And I can't really fit inside of it because it's got a desk in there.
That's true. Well, you could cut that all out. But anyway, any hoozle, this episode, we'd like to thank co-producer Anna L. Thank you so much, Anna, for your support. And we will talk later at the end of the show about what a co-producer is, how you can become one if you so choose, and all about that stuff.
And now, on to our read-along. This week, we will be just continuing our A Breath of Snow and Ashes. Shut up.
Careful.
No. Disgusting is what I was going to say. And then I was like, no. Continuing. That's what I do. So again, this week, we will be continuing our A Breath of Snow and Ashes read along, beginning with chapter 10 entitled Duty Calls. And that's D-U-T-Y, not D-O-O-D-Y-I-E. Duty?
Unless you're in South Park.
Yeah. And then we'll talk back.
It sings.
You know, it doesn't talk. It doesn't talk in words, but it definitely lets you know when a duty calls, you go.
Because the poop in South Park goes, how to how?
Mr. Hanky. Okay.
Yes. Hanky, the Christmas poop. That's all I know. He loves me and
that's
love you.
The best.
I agree. So before Jamie can leave to go be an Indian agent, he needs to chat with Roger back about what he knows about Thangs. It's interesting that what he gets from conversations of the future with Claire and Roger are so different. Even if he gets the same type of information or facts, it's going to be, you know, given differently.
It's delivered. It's delivered with different inflection and different. They have different things that they focus on, right? He's more of a historian. He's like, these are the facts. This is the this. Whereas, you know, Claire is looking at it from a completely different viewpoint. So that makes sense to me.
Well, it's not just looking at it from a different viewpoint, although she is literally from a different viewpoint because she's an earlier.
Well, yeah, but it is a different viewpoint because she's going to notice different things. Like if you read a history book and I read a history book, you will remember a fact, a completely different fact as the most important thing than I will. Just like when you and I read the same book,
yes.
Things hit me differently than they hate you. So it's the same book and it's the same history.
That happens with normal everything between humans, right? That's not abnormal. What I'm trying to say is it's more than just two people reading the same book and saying, oh, I remember this and oh, I remember this, or these are the two points, right? The difference is not just that they're talking about the same stuff, because they are kind of the experience of the Native Americans or what happens to them. Like, so the topic is the same topic, right? He's going to find out more information. The difference is it is not Claire's area of expertise. It is Roger's area of expertise. Now, he was not an Americanist. However, having studied history, he definitely would have more of an experience of reading historical docs, what have you, about it.
You know what I would love? Uh-oh. I would love to get a full set.
Oh, of Frank's books?
No.
I would like
a full set. I'm talking real books, Ginger, not fake ones that exist inside of a book.
Okay.
I'm talking about like real textbooks, like history textbooks that are used by people from the UK.
Huh.
And I would like to compare and contrast them based on what we as Americans were forced to learn in school, right?
Well, remember, they're not going to learn much about there. For them, U.S. history is world history.
No, but their world history, that's what I'm saying. Their world history would be different. I'm just saying I would, and that's my main focus is world history, right? Because how we interpreted events and we teach it to our children versus how they interpret events and taught it and teach it to their children. And I find that personally fascinating.
So Jamie thinks that those conversations he has with Claire are rather fantastical and those with Roger are depressing. Even chatting with Bree, he says, was interesting. Quote, no threat to his peace of mind, unquote. But chatting with Roger, quote, it was like talking to a particularly evil-minded fortune teller, one you hadn't paid enough to hear something pleasant, unquote. Then he remembers a certain fortune teller in Paris. He hadn't intended to do it himself, meaning go to the woman, but the woman grabbed his hand. He, quote, bent close enough that he could smell the ancient seat. Seat? Sweat.
What?
I must have left a W out.
You certainly did.
Bent close enough so he could smell the ancient sweat of her and see the lice crawling in the grizzled hair that keeked from the edge of her rusty black shawl, unquote. Yeah, it's not Claire. Hold on. I'll explain what I mean. There's a theory, which I didn't have. I thought it was interesting until I just read this. There's a theory in the fandom, as there are many of, and we have our own as well. So it's valid definitely to have your own. There's a theory in the fandom that the fortune teller was Claire out of time. After reading this, ain't no Claire going to get lice. No, it's not her. So that's a zero. Okay.
I would like to say that my daughter is now 12 and, you know, she homeschooled last year and we've been social distancing for the last, you know, 5 months. I am still so scarred by her time in public school when she had lice. Two of the times were like almost back to back because it's like we got it, we got rid of it. And then it was like there was another resurgence. And I was like, I am so over this. But I am so scarred from those lice experiences that I can't even read the word lice without scratching my head and like needing a shower.
Everyone, I mean, you guys, if you've been there, you know, everything in your house has to be like cleaned, bombed, frozen, thrown away. I don't know, something. And all the humans have to either have their head shaved. No, I'm just kidding. But if you have shoulder length or longer hair and you hire someone to like do the whole lice picking or looking for lice or what's the other word? Lice or their louts?
Nits.
Louts. They can hang around too, but they're a little harder to get rid of. Could be. Or maybe lice is harder. I don't know. But oh my goodness. Yeah. It can take hours to go through one person's head. Hours. And that poor person, first of all, she's got a heck of a great business model. Would I want to do it? No. Does she probably make good money? And will she never be out of the job? Yes. But
gross.
It, literally, the first time I ever heard of like, this is my name. It says my words. Yeah. Yeah. But I was going to say like a lice mobile or anti-lice mobile. Like this woman, I mean, she shouldn't have like a truck or anything. I don't know. She just had a car.
She's a mobile nitpicker.
Literally. Oh my goodness. So yes, it was not Claire. She tells him, "T'en chat toi, you are a cat, a little red cat." And she continues, "You have a 9 in your hand and death. You'll die 9 times before you rest in your grave." Unquote.
I completely forgot about this.
Aww.
In my rereadings. And I can explain why.
Uh-oh.
This has to be my second reading of A Breath of Snow and Ashes.
What? Stop.
I'm not. I will not stop. Because I read the fourth book first. I went back and read 1 through 4 again. Right before Fiery Cross, I had read 1 through 4 again before it came out. But then as the books keep coming and they're longer, I don't have time to read the whole series again. So I've been just not.
Book 8's going to blow your mind.
I know. I read them once because I just don't have time. And that was a minor detail that I did not remember.
So I've said it before on the show. So this is what I do. I definitely don't have time to like deep read more than what we're doing. You know, well, that's a funny story that. But yeah, so who has time? Not this week. So yes, normally what I do is I have what we're currently doing a deep dive on outside of, you know, the only time I'm not doing any close reading, obviously, is when the show's on the air and we have to watch the show and do close watching, I guess. I don't know. So for most of the year, though, not 8 to 12 months of the year, we're close reading something, or I'm close reading some book. So I never get ahead on that book. Like I stay with only the chapters because like ain't gonna borrow trouble. There's no purpose to get ahead because I'm not, unless we have to get ahead. I have to get ahead to prep for something because of circumstances or my schedule. That's different. But in general, I just prep that week for what we discussed that week because life. However, that's work, right? We prepare for the show. That is now a type of work. And it's not unenjoyable, but it's still work. But what I also do on my own personal readings is I cycle through all the books all the time. Now, I don't go around listening to them. I used to have a much longer. That's funny. I used to have a commute,
right?
To work. Much longer. Yeah, 45 minutes compared to, I don't know, 2 minutes to walk to my computer from my bedroom.
I mean, to be fair, my commute when I'm actually in my car is significantly longer than it used to be.
That's true. But you don't commute but once a month.
No, I go. No, I drive in once a month. But then at that time, I have two hours, 45 minutes
to listen
each way.
Or to do.
To listen to things. Yeah. So I have been using that time to listen to audiobooks. But I brought my daughter with me this time so that we could enjoy some streaming because we haven't been able to do that in 5 months. But I couldn't listen to the books I would normally listen to with her in the car. Number one, it's not appropriate. And number two, she doesn't care to listen to them, to the same ones that I want to listen to. So, or if I'm in the middle of a book halfway, I don't want to make her start listening to a book that I've half listened to already.
So my personal listening, when I say I do, and I do 100% mean this, I cycle. So we own, well, I think we own, I own all of the ebooks and audiobooks of the big book, of the big books. I don't own every single, I think I own all the Bulges on ebook. I do not all the Bulges have been narrated, I don't think. If they have been, it's not Davina. And I've only bought one or two books by Diana that are not narrated by Davina. So I'm talking about the big books right now, okay? The big eight right now, for now. So I am constantly, it's on a wheel. Like I'm always looping through them. And what I normally go through them for, and this is going to sound kind of funny, but I have listened, it's kind of like anti what Summer's just saying, right? Because you would think the more you listen, the more you remember, or the more familiar you are with something. And I think that's correct. However, the way I listen, not 100% of the time, but on my own personal listen-alongs, I guess, read-alongs, listen-alongs, is I've listened to her books so often that they are like a friend. They are like a companion. And so I can, for the most part, I'm learning which ones I can and cannot sleep to. But what I do is I set on a sleep timer for 30 to 45 minutes and I put on, you know, wherever I last was on one of the books and I play it as I go to sleep. Now, normally I have music or something that's soothing and whatever. I can do either. Davina's voice is soothing to me. I can fall asleep to her voice and I know the stories decently well. So I am not distracted by like something new, right? There may be something there that I'm like, oh, that's right. Like the wording of something or whatever. But I'm not like, she did what? So I always have, I have the main things that's in tiny chunks that we do for the show. I have my own personal read along that I have not every single night, but a lot of nights. And that goes, you know, I don't know if I go through all eight books in a year, but I know I was on book six earlier this year and I'm already on Moby. So, I mean, it can happen relatively quickly. I have found though, no spoilers, that at least certain parts of Moby still kind of freak me out. Not like I can't sleep in the dark freak out, but like it's Diana at some of her best, like mystery writing or, you know, suspense. Oh, and it just like, that's not great for sleeping at night. But other than that, I still can. So Moby's the hardest one to actually stay asleep from because it's the one I know least. So I'm like listening and discovering. So that one I'm least familiar with. Anyway, that has nothing to do with what I also listen to for pleasure because I do consider it pleasure, but I don't consider it, you know, it's at nighttime anyway. So I have cycled through these books. Not since we started the show, I would say maybe the last 3 to 4 years, I've just always kind of kept a low rolling boil. Anyway, I always have something going in the background. And then I have my pleasure reads, which have nothing to do with anything, fiction, nonfiction, whatever. It's totally different than any of Diana, right? It's just what I actually want to read to get ahead, but to take myself into something else or learn something else. So yeah, it's a lot, but... So this is actually kind of interesting. Now I understand why sometimes, not only why Summer doesn't maybe remember certain things, but that it surprises you sometimes, right?
Oh, yeah.
Apparently like this fortune teller, you had forgotten it.
It had been a while since I had remembered it.
Since you had remembered it. You re-remembered it. So this is important. Well, I guess not that important. But again, what she says is you will die 9 times before you rest in your grave. And she calls after him. Sometimes dying doesn't hurt, but more often it does, unquote. Now he's remembering this and he replies to his memory, no, it doesn't. And he's quoting Murta. Remember, Murta, as he dies, says it doesn't hurt a bit. Something like that. It doesn't hurt a bit to die. Something like that. Another of the few and fragmentary memories of Culloden. They were beginning to come back and he hadn't told Claire about them yet.
Why do you think they're coming back? Why now? Do you have any speculation, any thoughts on that?
So this is about this early. Are we still in? I have a date here somewhere. I didn't write it down. So the last episode that I remember us talking about a chapter with a date, it was sometime in 1773. So how long has it been since she went back in 68-ish, which would have been 1760. She went back in 45. It was 1743. So about 2 years difference. So 68 would have been like 66. So it's been not quite. It's been like 17 years since. No, that's not true. Not quite 10 years since Claire's been back. Put it that way.
But if you think about it, I mean, if all things being equal, right? Usually your lost memories get jogged by something that mirrors or is identical or reminds them of something specific. So it's like, what is happening right now? Is it the government troops and getting closer to revolution that is bringing it back to him? Is it the American Revolution being on the horizon that is reminding him of the Jacobite Rebellion?
It could be just the topic or the experience of battle in general, which, remember, book five, again, if you've seen the show, which most of you probably have, I'm not going to go into the differences because y'all know them. Well, I guess you don't know them yet because we haven't gotten there in book six yet. But anyway, in book five, there's the Battle of Alamance, where after which Roger is hanged, right? So that's in the book. And there's that battle. Well, I guess it's not a spoiler, so I can say it. So in the book, I don't know. In the show, and they may not even like go this whole flashback thing because he's been having it's so not in line with the show. So it doesn't matter. But in the books, he experienced, since Murtaugh was dead in the books, there's no way Murtaugh, you know, at least in body, can trigger anything because, yeah. Now, so books only, I don't know that it's battles only because this, and you know, who knows? It could have been since Alamance and he's been having these memories and Diana hasn't told us, right? We don't know if it's not been triggered by that because of what's happened recently. Let's just talk about book six. The two most dramatic things are the Dutch cabin, which was awful, and seeing people who were dead and thinking of them dying. And, you know, okay, he and Claire have had a number of conversations now. If I die, you know, don't kill yourself. Stay with the weans, stay with the Baroness. They need you, right? That kind of thing. So it has come up. At least that conversation has come up. But so I don't know if there's anything that has triggered him, but it is interesting that memories from Culloden and this memory from the fortune teller is now coming up.
Yep.
As I was finishing up, he hadn't told Claire that they were coming back yet. So that's another interesting thing. He tells Claire pretty much everything. So as he goes off to find the men, he wonders what the old woman, this fortune teller, would have told him if he'd actually paid her. Quote, had she lied to spite him for his miserliness or told him the truth for the same reason, unquote. Mm. And as he leaves memories of the old fortune teller behind, he walks off to another one.
And that was chapter 10, moving along to chapter 11 entitled Blood Work.
Claire is in the surgery with Bobby Higgins. She educates him on red blood cells and of the cells that have the malarial parasite. And Bobby's amazed at all she knows as she's prepping the gallberry salve.
Was it the salve then or was it the syrup? She was trying to make it wasn't a salve until later. She was trying to make a syrup.
To drink?
Yeah, because
Oh, that's right.
And then she had to make later a salve. Later she vomits. She can't keep it down.
Got it. Okay. So as she's preparing the gallberries for some medicinal purpose, she begins talking to him about possibly having hookworms. She confirms that he's had fainting fits for about 6 months, and he's aghast that she magically knows that he had a rash the autumn before. It's called science, Bobby. I mean, I know you're too early in human history to really get upset at for not believing it. So we get it.
He doesn't have germ theory. It's fine.
21st century, not so much, folks. Okay. So when she tells him he might have a case of hookworms and he looks at himself in horror, it's hilarious. I mean, not that I'm seeing him, but it's being narrated. Poor dude. We learn that Bobby is only 23 and he announces that he'll have to puke very soon. And after he's done, he asks if he's gotten rid of the worms.
That's not where they live.
And she's like, oh, gosh. Yeah, exactly.
She's like, I don't think you can vomit from that point in your body. That's not how deep vomit goes.
And how to look for the eggs? Easy peasy. Fecal sedimentation.
Yeah, easy.
Quote, all you have to do, Bobby, is unquote. And he says, quote, "If it's all the same to you, Mom, I think I'll keep the worms," unquote.
Right. He's like, "I'm going to keep, I'm going to not do that, if that's okay.
Yeah.
I'm just going to not poop. I'm just going to never, ever poop again. In fact, I don't ever want to hear you say the word poop." And moving right along, we will be concluding this week's read along with chapter 12, entitled Further Mysteries of Science.
Roger comes home to Bree looking at Lord John's gift to her. It is white phosphorus. So what was her plan to do with this? What was she going to do with this phosphorus? Oh, she thinks
matches.
Maybe she'll make matches. Kate O quotes some of the text. "And you intend to do what with it?" he asked, trying to keep any note of foreboding from his voice. He had the vaguest memories of hearing about the properties of phosphorus in his distant school days. He thought either it made you glow in the dark or blew up. Neither prospect was reassuring.
No.
And Kate writes, "I love the image that this brings to mind. I see Brianna seated at the table, practically vibrating with excitement at all of the possibilities bouncing around in her head, and Bodger racically. And Roger basically backing away slowly as he learns what is in the green jar."
No, but I also laughed just thinking that Lord John was concerned that this might be thought of as a romantic gift.
Oh, my, seriously.
Please, please let her. I hope her husband lets her have it. Oh, lets her have goodness. This present. This very, very romantic white phosphorus.
So we're to keep this potentially dangerous stuff, especially out of Jemmy's hands, likely in Claire's surgery. Roger says, "I'll take it over there." Kate O writes, "Anyone else think that when you came to the past to warn your parents that they are supposed to die when their house burns down, the absolute last thing you want to do to store at said house is white phosphorus?" This is what she's writing as if she were Bree. "I know you're supposed to die in a house fire, but hey, Mama, do you think we could store this highly flammable material in your surgery? It's not like Diana lets us forget about the fire. It comes up all the time."
Very true.
Knock, knock. It's Jamie. He's come to speak with Roger. So by this time, we learn that they'd already spoken about the role of the Cherokee in the upcoming revolution. He tells Roger that he has to leave in the morning for the Cherokee village and needs him to do something in his place. Bree will see to the barley harvest. Young Ian will go with Jamie, as will the Beardsleys. And he needs Roger to go to Cross Creek to collect the new tenants. Wow. This is huge. I mean, it kind of, I guess, an honor, but also just a huge freaking responsibility, right?
All of them.
All of it. So Archbug is going to go along with Roger and Tom Christie. Why the latter? Well, they're Protestants. But Bree doesn't get why this makes such a difference, why you would need Protestants to go pick up these people who might be Protestant. Kate O writes, "Just when you think your father-in-law is entrusting you with an important task because you're the son of the house, and yes, that's part of it, it's really because you're a Presbyterian. Jamie is nothing if not practical." That is so right. Mm-hmm. Roger likens the depth of feeling involved between Scottish... He's helping Bree understand. Roger likens the depth of feeling involved between Scottish Protestants and Catholics to that in the American Civil Rights Movement, meaning the two sides, or the two or more sides in the American Civil Rights Movement. Quote, "Mr. Christie is enough of a Protestant to make the new people feel comfortable," unquote. So between Roger and Tom Christie, quote, "At least they'll not think they're entering the devil's realm entirely," unquote. Now, Bree is a bit disgruntled at being left to do the harvest while he, quote, "frolicked with a squad of his co-religionists in the romantically exciting metropolis of Cross Creek, population 200, unquote. And why is Arch going? Archbug is Catholic. He doesn't talk. They'll never realize he's Catholic.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
Bree asks, "When will they be back?" "It's going to be 4 to 6 weeks at least." Well, Roger's like, "Why not take Jem?" Because Jem's like, "I go, Daddy," or "Migo." "I go, Migo," whatever he says. He's like, "I go too, Daddy. I go too." And he's like, "Eh." And he's like, "Well, why not? I'm not going on a dangerous mission. We're not going to the Alamance again. There's no guns. We're going to get people. So why not? So why not take Jem? It'll give Jem something to do, entertain him, and it will get him out of Bree's hair for a bit. Kate O writes, quote, "Great Auntie Jocasta would love to see you, and Mummy can blow things up to her heart's content without worrying where you are, right?" Mm-hmm. Unquote. And we're back to the phosphorus. Just saying. However, Kate O continues, "Jemmy is going to be much better company than Archbug and Tom Christie." Every time I see Tom Christie, I want to say Tom Cruise now. Darn it.
It's definitely not the same person.
Okay, Tom Christie is now recast as Tom Cruise. It's going to happen.
Don't do it.
It's done. Diana has the best descriptive phrases, comparing a hopping gem to a demented popcorn kernel. And Megan P. closes us out. Jamie continues to prove his trust in Roger, which is really nice. He's definitely trusting Roger with tasks that aren't necessarily the easiest. I also really appreciate the way that Jamie embraces the strength of the women in his life and the multitudes with which they are capable of. Brianna's intelligence is one of my favorite things about her character. She brings a lot to the Ridge and is 100% an extension of her dad in authority and wit.
And that was chapter 12. Join us next week when we will be discussing chapters 13 and 14. So 13 is Safe Hands and chapter 14, People of the Snowbird. As always, we still have some chapters available. If you'd like to join us and be a contributor, you can find out more about that at www.outlanderpod.com/snow. And while you're there, find out more about our group. Go to www.outlanderpod.com/group.
Again, a very special thanks to our co-producer for this episode, Anna L. To find out more about how you can support us on Patreon, which is where you'll find information about a co-producer, visit outlanderpod.com/Patreon. And Sam, what if they wanted to give one more, go buy one more thing at our shop?
I mean,
or five more things. I'm not putting any limits on y'all.
There's no limits. I mean, if you want to find out what we have available right now, the masks have been selling very well. And if you are a part of our group on Facebook, you've seen everyone posting their beautiful faces.
Their t-shirts, their long sleeve t-shirts. People are going over and above, whatever. People are going for more than just masks. Yes.
And they are. And remember, we're 100% of our proceeds from now till the end of the year, we are going to be donating to Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS, their COVID-19 relief fund. And if you want to see what we have available and perhaps donate a little bit yourself, you can go to www.outlanderpod.com/shop.
Thank you guys, as always, so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode.
Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at outlanderpod.